The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Can't get enough of my dulcet tones. Want exclusive content that you can't find anywhere else, including my take on the real story behind the fake news? Join my cabinet, Gorka's Cabinet, today. Go to sebgorka.com, SEBGORKA.com. Click on the Gorka's Cabinet banner and join the most exclusive club out there for content you can't find anywhere else and the knowledge you need. Gorka's Cabinet at sebgorka.com.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
This is America First with me, Sebastian Gorka, and I'm very excited to introduce our guest host for today, founder of American Greatness, Chris Buskirk.
Well, hello, listeners to the Sebastian Gorka Show. This is Chris Buskirk. Happy to be back with all of you once again. I'm usually a guest when Dr. Gorka is in the studio manning the Platinum Gorka microphone. Today I am driving the ship and happy to be doing this. It's been a while. And I love this audience. Every time I come on the show as a guest, my Twitter lights up. And it's not like the way it lights up when I go on to left-wing, liberal, legacy media. Then it lights up and nobody likes what I have to say. But when I come on here, my Twitter lights up and it's my kind of people. I love it. So happy to be talking to you today. We've got, as we so often seem to lately, we've got a bunch of interesting stuff to get through today. I hope we can do it all because I've got some really smart guests coming up a little bit later in the show. I just want to preview that for you and then kind of get into some of the stuff that I've been noticing developing over the past, gosh, I don't know, maybe a week or so. Maybe it's been that long. I mean, you know the big context we're in, of course, with, 2020, what a year, right? But I am seeing sunlight come through the clouds. They are separating, and I can see it. Those first rays of light are starting to peer through the clouds, and things, I think, are looking a little bit better than some people might want you to believe. But in terms of the guests we've got coming up, Ned Ryan, who I know is a frequent guest on this show. Ned is the founder of American Majority. He is the author of Our Republic, a great book. He is a contributor to American Greatness. You can find him there at amgreatness.com. And he's got some really interesting perspectives on the election. Ned is, among other things, he really is an expert on electoral politics, especially on the grassroots aspect of it. How do you get people out to vote? How do you get people registered? How do you do those things to identify your people and get them to the polls, get them to turn out and vote? And that's one of the things I want to talk about. But Ned's also a very good observer, a keen observer of the overall political and cultural scene. And so I want to kind of get that nuts and bolts perspective from Ned when he comes on, but I also want to get kind of the macro view of where he sees the country. Where are we heading? The good, the bad, and the ugly, in fact. And so that'll be coming up here actually in the next segment with Ned Ryan. And then in the other two guests I've got coming in the succeeding hours are Julie Kelly, who's got a great new book out, which seems very, very appropriate right now. It is called Disloyal Opposition. It is a book written about the Never Trumpers, who they fell out with Donald Trump back in 2015 and 2016, and these are people who at one time were considered conservatives. That we all read them, we all listened to them, and they turned on Donald Trump and they tried to take him down unsuccessfully, thankfully. But they have sort of carved out this cottage industry in trying to destroy President Trump and his administration, for that matter. And Julie's book was published yesterday. It has been doing really, really well on Amazon. And it is a very timely book for some of the obvious reasons, I think, that you all know. But one of the reasons is that there are a bunch of groups that have just been formed in the past month or two or three, like the Lincoln Project, like some of these other groups that are, sort of Republicans against Trump groups. It's the same old people. Where are they getting their money? It's not coming from Republican donors, I can tell you. But the front, the forward public-facing element of all of these groups is, hey, we're Republicans. Hey, we're conservatives, but we despise Trump and you have to vote for Biden. Well, who is that targeted at? Who's paying for that? Well, Julie Kelly's been on this beat for years, and her book, I've read the book twice, and it is extremely timely because it's the people she's talking about in the book who are back forming these groups that are very, very well funded. And they're trying to carve off those sort of marginal Trump voters, the people who could kind of go either way. They're trying to sow the seeds of discord and dissension. And like I say, Julie is an excellent, excellent investigative reporter. She's written a top-notch book, and we'll dive into some of the stuff in the book with her, of course. But then I really want to get her take on these groups that have so recently formed, and so that they come out of nowhere, and all of a sudden they have a ton of money. I mean, they spend a lot of money on media. That's interesting. And she's got their number. So we'll talk with her about that. And then the third hour, I've got Blake Masters coming on. And Blake is, this is something I think you'll be really interested in hearing. Blake comes out of Silicon Valley. He is the chief operating officer of Thiel Capital, which means he works for Peter Thiel, who's famously a Trump supporter. He spoke at the 2016 Republican convention, and Blake is one of his senior guys. He is I know him well. He is a friend. He is a very, very smart, thoughtful conservative, and one of the things I really want to get from him and talk through with him is not so much the day-to-day stuff, but it's kind of that meta stuff. What is it we do to change the trajectory in this country? Not just nibble around the edges. How do we change the trajectory? How do we rebuild, right? This is what Silicon Valley, when it's at its best, not always, we know, but when it's at its best, it's known for building things. And so he brings a really interesting perspective to this. So we'll be talking with Blake about that when he's on a little bit later. Now, turning to the news. And by the news, I don't necessarily mean just what happened today, but what's been going on. I've been talking a lot with people lately, some of it in private, but I've been, even despite this virus, I've been doing some public speaking and some media and whatnot. I've been talking with folks about just the extraordinary things that have been going on in this country over the past, gosh, I don't know, let's just start with in 2020, of course, but definitely over the past 4, 5, 6 weeks. I mean, it's really, really unusual and not good, by the way. We have seen this country go from a period of peace and prosperity, right? We had record low unemployment coming into this year. Stock market was doing well. Something that's even, in a sense, to me, is even more important is that wages were going up. You know, wages in this country, the median wages for the middle class have stagnated for decades in this country. And that's a problem for, you know, the vast majority of people. Most people are sort of broadly middle class, but they were going up. And that's a good thing. We want the middle class to be more secure. And then, of course, this virus hits and the world changes. I mean, it's just for any of you out there who are students of history, it's so interesting to see how these things that you almost can't predict. I mean, you know that viruses are out there and that they've affected great nations in the past, but it's very difficult to predict when, right? You know it can happen at any time, but you don't know when. And so things are going along well. This hits the policy responses to that, meaning the political responses, I think, ranged from, shall we say, mediocre to extremely poor and disastrous. And we are now months down the road from that, and we're starting to see states close down again. And that is very troubling. I mean, they made big mistakes, I think, in April and March and April, and they seem to want to double down on those things now, that which is all the more incredible because we know more now, and nobody seems to want to act on the additional information, that we have. And then, of course, we've got all the protests. But and this is where I say I see the clouds parting just a bit here. If you've been watching what's been going on, it's almost like the entire nation had a fever for a month or 6 weeks, and the fever's starting to break. It was 105. I don't know if it's down to 98.6 yet again, but at least maybe we're down to 99.6. I want to talk with you a little bit more about that and think about the backlash that may be beginning, and some of the rethink, I think, that's going on right now. Meantime, though, we got to run to a quick break. When we come back, we'll have Ned Ryan. He is the founder of American Majority. I'm Chris Buskirk on the Sebastian Gorka Show. We'll be right back.
This is America First, and I'm Sebastian Gorka. Let's get back to the show with Chris Buskirk.
And I am the aforementioned Chris Buskirk. Very happy to be with you. As promised, I've got Ned Ryan on the line. Ned is a contributor to American Greatness. He's the founder of American Majority. And Ned, I don't want to scare you off here, but in the last segment, I built you up pretty big. So you need to deliver.
Well, you know, I'm here to make magic happen. So let's begin.
Okay, so let's start. I'll just tell you what I was saying at the end of the last segment. I was sort of going to get your take on this. Obviously, you and I have been talking about this a lot, for the past month or so. But, you know, we've got this backdrop in this country where we've got this virus. Everybody's under these shelter-in-place orders. That has all kinds of weird, unknown, or unquantified effects, right? You just keep people away from their friends and their family. And for some people, it gets a little weird. For other people, it gets a lot weird, and you've got all these things that we really won't know the full impact of, maybe never, but some of the stuff like the increase in deaths of despair and the increase in drug and alcohol abuse and all those sorts of things, but everybody's been on edge. And then 6 weeks ago, roughly, we have this sort of explosion in civil unrest. We have protests. Some peaceful, some not. We've got riots. You know, I'm in Arizona. We saw one of our sort of major shopping malls was attacked a couple weeks ago, or maybe it's close to a month ago now. And it's been tough, right? I mean, every single day the president's getting pounded and pounded and pounded. And we're thinking, boy, this is really a tough environment to run a reelection campaign. But 2 weeks ago, I was at his rally here in Phoenix. He was in really good form here. People were loving it. There were very few protesters out there. And then there was the Mount Rushmore speech. Yeah. And what I've been contending is, and this is where I want you to see what you think, I thought the Mount Rushmore speech was a home run. It was excellent. Where does the president stand? I see this as like a turning point. Like, I think he's in the process of turning the battleship around here.
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, massive pivot, and I'll tell you more why I think there's been such a massive pivot in the right direction in the last, call it, 4 or 5 days. But really quick, I mean, think about it. He's taken three major body blows: impeachment, then he had coronavirus, then he had the riots and looting, And I told some of the you know, folks in the West Wing, I'm like, listen, he's down. He's not dead. And I think what he has done in the last 5 days have been a couple things that are vital to his reelection. First of all, he had to do a reset on messaging. And Mount Rushmore was a massive reset. I think he had been thrown off. And I told my wife this. I'm like, you know, I think where there was some paralysis in the White House was that he was listening to some voices, which I think, thankfully, he has decided are not some of the best voices to listen to. But when you listen to too many voices, it causes this paralysis when you're not following your instincts. And, you know, honestly, I encouraged him to do this. Like, sir, you have the best instincts I've seen in politics in years. Go back to following your instincts. That's what won the election in 2016. That's what will win you re-election. And so what he did on Mount Rushmore is, I think, really crystallized what is taking place. First of all, I told my wife again, I'm like, the amazing part about this is he has to stand in front of these four major heroes of American history and actually explain who they are, because we haven't taught real history in our country. And not only that, but he defined it in such a way that he has to hit this theme nonstop between now and the election. This is about Americanism, the American Republic versus the Marxism and socialism that I don't think has taken hold inside of the Democratic Party. I think it is the Democratic Party. And I think the beautiful thing that he has done is a full-throated embrace of the American Republic. And, of course, Chris, I loved it because it really has some of the same themes of my book, Restoring a Republic. But I thought one of the best lines he had was that we are essentially, the American Republic is the pinnacle of Western civilization, and it is worth fighting for. And I literally started, you know, applauding, standing up and applauding when he said that line, because that's what we're up against. We are the pinnacle of Western civilization. These Marxists and socialists, they were never coming for the Confederate statues. They were coming to overthrow the American Republic to install a new Marxist order. That's what we're up against. And I'm glad he hit that theme, and he should hit it nonstop between now and November.
Yeah, this is the big takeaway that I hear from what you just said, and I totally agree with it, is this. Donald Trump needs to be more Donald Trump. He mm-hmm. has the best political instincts of anybody in a generation, certainly in the Republican Party, I think. He is an excellent retail politician. He knows what's important to middle America. I think it's interesting that I think he has no idea what's important to people in Manhattan, where he lives, and doesn't care. But he does know really well what's important to people in Michigan, what's been important to people in Pennsylvania or Wisconsin or Arizona, in terms of coastal elites, of which he, in a way, is one by a lot of metrics. He's sort of out of touch with them, and that's a good thing, because with the rest of the country, he understands, you know, hey, I got an idea. Let's stop exporting our middle class to China. Let's bring those jobs home. Let's get people working. Let's get their wages up.
Isn't that a shocking concept? I mean, the fact that this outsider comes in, looks at this system that we have currently, which we're so far away from the founder's original intent, that's a whole long conversation, but says this system is rigged against the American people. We are not serving the best interests of the American people. We are not promoting it. We are not taking care of their jobs or livelihood. And it was one of those things where this is literally just basic common sense, rational thought, and you would have thought he is the great threat to the administrative state in this rigged system, because he's come in with that fresh perspective and said, no, this does not work for the American people, and I intend to get a system of government, hopefully in his second term, keep working on it, that actually prioritizes the American people. So no, I tell people, Chris, I mean, the next 4 months, and people say this mm-hmm. all the time, you know, that we're in the, it's going to be the biggest election of our lifetime. It is. This one is literally November of 2020 is the biggest election of our lifetime. And I think the thing that's encouraging me is not only the reset on the messaging. A lot of people haven't been following some of the staffing shifts that have taken place on the reelection. He made a major move on Thursday of last week in which he put in Susie Wiles to run the state of Florida again. And the important thing is Susie Wiles won the state for him in 2016. She's bringing back her team. They're going to hit the ground running again next week. I mean, that's a huge shift. And I told people in the White House, I'm like, I think your odds just went up 5 to 10% overall simply by fixing Florida and getting the right team in place. So I'm encouraged. I mean, the last 4 or 5 days have been some major shifts in the right direction. Still behind, still up against it, but trending in the right direction.
Florida is an interesting microcosm in a way, because of first of all, it's almost impossible for him to win re-election without Florida, right? I mean, you can put together a scenario,
correct,
but it's highly, highly unlikely, right? But what's been going on the ground in Florida? To explain that as to why that kind of shows what the challenges are for Republicans. I mean, they're very grassrootsy, you know, organizational type of challenges.
Oh, I mean, one of the things I highlighted to him and then have highlighted to other senior officials in the West Wing, but also in the campaign, absentee ballots. I mean, this is one thing where, again, really quick summary of how usually it works in statewide elections in Florida. Republicans have to win the absentee mail-in vote. And then you go to early in-person where Democrats win that and actually go into the lead in the overall vote. And then on election day, Republicans come roaring back with get-out-the-vote efforts on election day, and we usually end up winning sometimes by the narrowest of margins. And so it's one of those things that obviously I want to explain more about some of the dynamics, but there's a way that it works.
Let me cut you there because we got to go to a break, but let's just pick up on this aspect when we come back in the next segment, all right? I've got Ned Ryan on Twitter, at N-E-D-R-Y-U-N. I'm Chris Busker for Sebastian Gorka. We'll be right back.
The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump wants to meet you. This will be the first opportunity he's had to meet with American patriots like you since our country started reopening. His team will cover the flight, hotel, and give you VIP access for yourself and a guest. He'll even take a picture with you. All you have to do is text VIP to 88022 today for your chance to meet President Trump. Again, that's VIP to 88022 to enter to win this contest and to join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years. Paid for by Donald J. Trump for President, Inc.
On the side of the U.S. Constitution, America first.
Welcome back to the Sebastian Gorka Show. I'm Chris Buskirk. I am guest hosting for Dr. G while he's out today. You can catch up with me on Twitter at TheChrisBuskirk or on Parler. I recommend you go over to Parler, too. I think you'll enjoy it, at Buskirk, B-U-S-K-I-R-K. I've got Ned Ryan here again for this segment. I want to come back to you on this issue of some of the organizational challenges that Republicans need to deal with in terms of registration and absentee ballots and all those sorts of things. It's something that I know you've looked at in some detail in Florida, but maybe just describe what Republicans need to be doing nationwide in order to win.
Well, I mean, first of all, I stress this point. National elections really aren't national elections. They're 7 to 10 states that really truly decide. And, you know, I encourage the campaign, with no offense to the great people of New Mexico or Colorado, forget those two states. Go to Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, you know, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, throw in Minnesota. You win those states and you're probably going to be winning, you know, defend Arizona, defend Texas. You're going to be winning re-election, right? So it's focus on the right things. But going back really quick, I know I was trying to wrap up on that last break, but going back to some of the fundamentals that they got to get right in Florida, 40 days out from the 2016 elections, Republicans were in the lead in absentee ballot requests by 143,000, right? We're down by 323,000 absentee ballot requests right now, basically 466,000 behind where we should be 40 days out. And so I know what they're doing is getting some of those things right. And I even told the campaign, voter registration is great wherever you can get it done organically. Do voter registration. But this now becomes a 7 to 10 state race, precinct by precinct, identifying your supporters, getting them nailed down, getting them committed and pledged, you know, getting the absentee ballot stuff done in Florida. That's how you're going to actually win re-election. This is what the Obama campaign did in 2012 when they were up against it. And people were like, there's no way Obama's going to get reelected. They turned it into a 10-state race, precinct by precinct, identifying all of their supporters, getting them locked down, turning them out on election day. Trump can do the exact same thing, hits it on the messaging, does the fundamentals. And the other thing I got to tell you, too, Chris, that people are still not really focused on, Barr and Durham's work has been pushed back because of coronavirus. I was talking with some folks this morning that are pretty well connected. I'm telling you, if this really is as devastating as people think and starts coming out in August and September, the narrative is going to change even more so in Trump's favor coming into the fall elections. That's something that people should be thinking about as well.
Ned, what's the earliest date where people start voting?
You know, it depends on the state. I mean, there's obviously some states are 30 days out. Some states are only 15 days out. I mean, that's one of the things, too, that I
so
hope
is that Trump kind of the – is 30 days kind of the longest period so people start voting basically beginning of October at the earliest?
I've actually seen some states that have creeped even into September, right, that they've gone past 30 days. But most, as a general rule of thumb, are 30 days or 15 days. And I tell people this, hey, if you think that somehow you're going to forget on election day, go out and vote early, right? Get your vote in the bag. And I hope the Trump campaign does that. I mean, I hope they go out and they encourage more early voting. But the other thing that I will tell people this on the absentee ballot front, I know that the special election, because we were involved in it with American Majority Action up in Wisconsin, the 7th District special election, almost 50% of the entire votes cast, Chris, were absentee ballot. It's going to be a huge part of the strategy, obviously in Florida, but I think in other states as well. So that's kind of what we're doing with American Majority Action in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Virginia, is really driving people, go make your absentee ballot request, get them, mail them in, get it done.
It's really hard for me to sort of predict this. I mean, I guess for everybody, right? I mean, you would think in one sense that this is going to be a year where there's going to be more absentee ballots than any other time. And I think that's probably right. But I wonder if, people just aren't thinking about it. You know, there's going to be, I guess what I'm saying is there's some percentage of people who are going to wait too long and then they're going to realize in October, oh, shoot, I don't want to go out to the polls, but I also missed the deadline to get an absentee ballot. This is where the parties really need to act to find those people and be touching those people, you know, getting those touches out there, phone calls, texts, whatever, to get them to do it right now.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right. And, you know, thankfully I got some funders to actually be able to, you know, give me the ability to start in June with American Majority Action, because it's one of those things. Yeah, you know, it's human nature. They're distracted by a lot of different things, life in general. You got to get them focused and get them, hey, get your absentee ballot request, get it in. And we've had, it's been pretty funny, Chris, actually. We've had people where we text
Ned,
them.
Ned, can you stay one
they
more?
Go, hey, can you do your wife? Can you send
Ned,
me
can
my
you
wife?
Ned, we got to go to a break. Can you stay for one more segment?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
All right, very good. I'm Chris Buskirk, sitting in for Sebastian Gorka. Ned Ryan is my guest. We'll be right back after this message.
This is America First, and I'm Sebastian Gorka. Let's get back to the show with Chris Buskirk.
This is Chris Buskirk sitting in for Dr. G. Today, I have prevailed upon my friend Ned Ryan to stay for one more segment because that last segment on sort of nuts and bolts electioneering, making sure you get the ballots in the hands of your voters. I mean, that's something Republicans cannot hear enough. But now I want to kind of switch gears, Ned, and talk about some of the stuff that's been going on. I mean, for the past 6 weeks, we've basically seen, we've seen protests, we've seen riots, we've seen looting, we've seen statue toppling, we've seen name changes of institutions. You know, Princeton took Woodrow Wilson's name off of their graduate school. We see this basically a cultural revolution going on in this country.
Right.
And so much of that has been driven by people in and around an organization, a corporation called Black Lives Matter. I see the fever breaking. I see people like Terry Crews starting to push back
right.
on some of this stuff. I'm just thinking, like, how do you see it? Like, what's happened and where we are right now?
No, I mean, you're not only seeing Terry be outspoken about Black Lives Matter. I'm trying to remember the name. He was on the FS1. And he also said some of the same things about Black Lives Matter because he made the point, like, just go to their website. This is what I've been telling people for weeks and weeks. Just go to the website of Black Lives Matter. You understand these are avowed Marxists. they are about destroying the Western nuclear family. And I even said this on Twitter. I know I've written a couple pieces for American Greatness on this. But I've also been tweeting about it, that Black Lives Matter, they're anti-capitalist, they're anti-Western civilization, they're Marxist, they're violent, anti-Christian, transsexual, pro-homosexual, and they are really good corporate shakedown artists who are also liars. And I think it's time that we be more outspoken, not be afraid of it. And it's kind of Orwellian, Chris, when they have Black Lives Matter, the organization, and then the slogan Black Lives Matter, because then people say, well, I do believe that Black Lives Matter. Of course we do. Black Lives Matter, White Lives Matter, every life matters. But they don't want to talk about it because then you're racist, but then it's the same name as the organization, so then you can't actually attack the organization. And I tell people this, and I'll say it again. Black Lives Matter needs to be understood through critical race theory, where Lenin's theory was basically divide people by class. With critical race theory, it's by race. And what they've done is they've cloaked their Marxist-Leninist views and beliefs in race, so therefore people are intimidated to not actually call them out, because then they'll be called racist. Enough already. Call them out for who they are. They are purely unadulterated, proud. Embrace their Marxism. And again, it all goes back to they are not interested in critical race theory. The whole concept is that they are pushing is the very foundations of this country, the very founding of this country is racist. Therefore, any institution, anything that was built off the founding is illegitimate, and they can choose to accept or not accept any institution that is built off the founding, i.e., basically the entire American Republic. They're not interested, again, in just tearing down some statues. They are interested in completely blowing up and tearing down the American Republic. And again, like I said earlier, that's what this is about. It's either do we still believe in our constitutional republic, or are we just going to throw up our hands and say we're going to give in to the administrative state and this Marxism that's taking place and have a descent into darkness? I mean, that's what really November is about.
You know, Ned, what I've been telling people, and I've said this in some public spaces lately, that it's sort of to, how should I say this, ideologically mixed crowds, you know, some conservatives, some Democrats, some people in the middle. And I've said, look, here's what people need to understand is that the corporation, and it is a corporation known as Black Lives Matter, has pulled basically a rhetorical fast one on people with the naming of their group, because they draw people into a dialectic where they just ask you, well, don't you think Black Lives Matter? And what I say to people all the time is what you need to say is just answer the question this way, which is, I believe in the sanctity and the value of the lives of Black people, 100%. And you and I as Christians, 100%, absolutely
exactly.
Affirm that. But and I've said this on some legacy liberal media lately. I've said, but I completely disagree with a lot of the things that the corporation known as Black Lives Matter stands for, the things you were talking about. And once people separate those two things, they realize, hold on a second. This is to the point you were making, like, hold on a second. Yes, of course. Like, yes, I believe in the sanctity of the lives of Black people, 1,000%. But that doesn't mean I sign up for what this corporation that's taking millions and millions of dollars of donations is doing.
That's exactly right. And I think it's incumbent upon people like us to make sure that separation is made, to separate the two out and say, of course, we're this, we're for this, and we're adamantly opposed to this. And I think it's one of those things that will, again, it is starting. You're seeing that shift when you're seeing major sports figures, when you're seeing major Black actors saying, wait a minute, hold on. I don't believe in this corporation and what they're pitching. I don't believe in their Marxism. I don't believe in their pushing and trying to destroy the Western nuclear family. Of course I'm Black. Of course I believe that I should have every opportunity. We all believe that. I mean, this is the crazy thing where we actually all believe in the same things. And I think the thing that you know, you're seeing not only the Black Lives Matter, Antifa, all of these things, they haven't just taken hold inside the party. They have taken over the party, when in fact you have the Tammy Duckworth of the world, who you know is auditioning to be the vice presidential candidate, saying that all Trump did was talk about dead traitors on Friday night. That's absurd and ridiculous, but the fact that a sitting U.S. senator who is auditioning to be the vice presidential candidate has the gall and thinks that she has the freedom to be able to say that, it tells you they haven't taken foothold. They have taken over the Democratic Party.
Now, that's a, I mean, this is so true, Ned. I mean, it really is unbelievable. I mean, I guess I got to be more careful the way I use my own language. I mean, it's totally believable, but it's still appalling. In what low regard the a lot of Democrats hold this country, and by the way, implicitly or explicitly, a lot of times, most of the citizens of this country, right? When they say this country is racist, they don't mean just notionally a country. That's nothing. They mean the people, right? The people
that's
who
correct.
Voted for Trump, and not even just them. They mean everybody else too. I mean, they're just sort of imputing bad motives onto all these people, and it means that they're dehumanizing them.
That's absolutely correct. You dehumanize your opponents, though, and then you can do whatever to them that you want to do. That's the dangerous part.
Ned, we got to run now. I appreciate you coming on. People, you can find Ned Ryan on Twitter, at Ned Ryan, N-E-D-R-Y-U-N. Ned, thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chris.
America First, Magnificent.
Welcome back to the Sebastian Gorka Show. I'm Chris Buskirk, sitting in for Dr. G, who is getting some much-deserved rest. Boy, when he gets back, I can tell you it is going to be a dead run between now and November 3rd. So if you're going to get some rest and you're in the politics game, this is the time to do it. So I want to pick up on a couple of the things I was talking about with Ned Ryan in the last couple of segments. In particular, I want to come back to this idea of the sort of the what I think of as a rhetorical trap that a lot of people have found themselves in, and that is the lowercase BLM, Black Lives Matter, and then the uppercase BLM, the corporation. Black Lives Matter. People get drawn into it. I've seen it so many times play out in the media on interviews and things, and it becomes basically a version of, well, don't you think Black Lives Matter? And, you know, we need to be very thoughtful about how we address these things and the vocabulary we use, because basically what's happening is a kind of a sleight of hand, which is to say, if you affirm that statement, then what people think you're doing and what they're trying to get you to do is to affirm everything that the corporation known as Black Lives Matter stands for. And we don't. A lot of people don't. Most people don't stand for example, disrupting, to use their language, the nuclear family, two parents, kids. Exactly. Right. While at the same time, almost everybody, I mean, without exception, except for a few cranks, everybody affirms the sanctity of the lives of Black people and the value of those lives, of course, right? But they draw you into this. And this put me in mind of something. First of all, I want to encourage people to think about it that way, separating those two things and try and use that vocabulary in a way. I found it very helpful in dealing with people of good faith, just in ordinary life. And people say, yeah, okay, like that actually, I get what you're saying. Like that makes sense. And I'll listen to you now. And so that's very helpful. But it put me in mind of something. I'm going to tweet this out here right after this segment. There was Vaclav Havel was a dissident in Czechoslovakia under communism. And he ultimately became the prime minister of Czechoslovakia afterwards. Right after the fall of communism, and he wrote an essay called The Power of the Powerless, in which he describes a greengrocer, just an ordinary person, who puts a sign in the window of his store that says, "Workers of the World Unite." So, and he says, well, does he care about that? Well, no, not really. He just basically puts up the party slogan because he wants to be left alone to live his life. And it occurred to me that there's this same sort of thing going on where there's these slogans that people are forced to adopt if they want to be left alone. But Vaclav Havel and the people who brought down communism were able to break out of that dialectic, and they freed their countries. Look on my Twitter, at the Chris Buskirk. I'm going to post this right now, and you can see this essay for yourself. Very important. We've got to go to a break. We'll be back after this. I'm Chris Buskirk. We'll be back.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and The Battle for 1600.